Greg Bordonaro joining us, as he's wont to do, at 8:50 on a Monday morning. A lot of really good topics for us today, stuff that I'm extremely interested in. One, and it's like nobody's fault, but I don't understand. First of all, Greg, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you, Brian?
I'm well. The name, image, and likeness stuff in college sports fascinates me in a lot of different ways. But one of the things that it's so opaque, there's no real way to know what kind of money we're talking. And so I'm wondering if you did a deep dive into this NIL and UConn specifically, and I'm curious if you get any more insight into what we're really talking about money-wise.
So, the purpose of this sort of stories, and there's actually going to be more stories about it, is take a look at how NIL is sort of shaping UConn and UConn athletics. And we did get into a little bit of the money, but the reality is most of the money is hidden. Schools are exempt from freedom of information in terms of NIL deals, so there really is little public information, although there are spots you could find it. There is one website that estimates that $325 million in NIL money is going to be spent this year from collectives. Collectives are basically privately run organizations, usually headed by business executives that are raising money to pay players for various purposes. There is one collective in Connecticut. It's called Bleeding Blue for Good. It's run by two former business executives, and it's a nonprofit. So the fact that it was a nonprofit did give us some insights because they have to file their tax returns. So we did look up their tax return, and in 2002, they had about $580,000 in revenue. Now, 2002 was like basically when NIL really got off the ground. So, you know,
you mean 2022?
Right away, 2022. Yep, 2022. And that's when NIL really just got off the ground, and they raised about $580,000 in revenue, most of it from fundraising, and a lot of that money did end up going to players in various respects. We saw some of their expenses, including, you know, they spent about $180,000 on Pro Camps, which is a marketing agency that sets up events, basically sports camps that players come to and they get paid for helping run these sports camps for kids. They did one in like Waterbury and in various parts of Connecticut. So that was the best insights that we got into where some of this money is going.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. There's different buckets. The players can get their own sort of sponsorships. There's the collectives that pool money, and that, you know, there are different ways to go about it. The fascinating thing with UConn, you know, it's just moving forward with this stuff, it's like they don't have Power Five football money, so I'm just fascinated and curious about how they are able to compete basketball wise because a lot of the big schools get the basketball gets sort of subsidized by the football money. So I'm just really fascinated by how the whole thing works. Now, you said the Bleeding Blue for Good is a nonprofit, and they talk about how they want to just not just get them the money, but sort of teach them, the student athletes, about what, you know, what they need to do to manage themselves as a business and so on and so forth. Is that just window dressing, or is that legitimate?
I think some of it is legitimate. UConn itself has this organization called the Worth Institute, and it's kind of helps students with entrepreneurship, and they have this organization now called a program called Championship Labs, which is specifically for student athletes to help them figure out how to promote themselves on social media, how to actually sell merchandise on different social media platforms. So I do think there is an entrepreneurial element that will help the student athletes long term. But you know, at the end of the day, when you're trying to compete, well, that helps you know, build your NIL credibility. But at the end of the day, you know, it could come down to dollars and cents. How much are you going to give your individual athletes? And you know, will other schools outpace them? UConn will probably never be the top team giving athletes money. Right now, I think the biggest seller for UConn is obviously Hurley and what he could do for players to turn them into, you know, potentially NBA players. But yeah, you're right. A lot of it will come down in the future. You know, UConn not being in a big football conference, can they eventually get into one of those big conferences? I think that's ultimately going to dictate a lot of the future success of both obviously football and maybe even basketball down the road.
You know, the piece is interesting in that you go to harvardbusiness.com to read about it. Really details what UConn's infrastructure is to deal with this, and it is big business, and I actually think it's really fruitful space for some, you know, investigative reporting. And you could say it's clickbaity, but I'd like to know how much, like, Paige Bueckers makes from all this stuff and all of those different things. I mean, to me, that's stuff that people really, really are interested in. We're talking with Greg Bordonaro from the Hartford Business Journal here on Brian & Company. A couple of quick stories to get through. I wanted to ask you about, you know, Philip Morris International. You know, people get confused. They hear Philip. If you're old enough, you think Philip Morris, you think of Marlboro. But with Philip Morris International, it's actually not Marlboro, but they're based in Connecticut now.
Yeah, so Philip Morris International is an international company, obviously. They moved their headquarters in 2002 from New York City to Connecticut. You know, Governor Lamont really supported this move. He had a press conference, although the state did not give any incentives to Philip Morris. Philip Morris International does sell cigarettes outside the U.S., but not in the U.S. It has a unit that it spun off that it no longer owns, Philip Morris USA, that does sell cigarettes in the U.S., but Philip Morris International is all cigarette free in the U.S. and they're trying to basically move that way internationally and continue to sell non-cigarette products in the United States. They do that through a couple of different products that do have nicotine in them, but they're, you know, less harmful than smoking a cigarette. They have like a pouch that you take orally, heated tobacco products. So they have a president, Stacey Kennedy, who we sat down with. She's the CEO of their U.S. operations, and she basically took us through their move to Connecticut, why they moved here. They have about 225 employees in Stamford right now. They want to grow that to about 300. And you know, she's basically in charge of sort of dictating the cigarette-free future in the United States.
Yeah, and they're in the UBS, some of the UBS space. Has that space all been taken care of now? Because, I mean, UBS had a huge presence there in Stamford, and it's like they abandoned it, right? But they had a ton of space.
Yeah, a lot of office space in Stamford has been absorbed. You know, the vacancy rate is still maybe a little bit elevated, but they're having better success than, say, the city of Hartford in filling up some of their empty office space.
Yeah, you think about space. We're talking with Greg Bordonaro from the Hartford Business Journal on the Connecticut Business Blend here on Brian & Company. Just really quickly, the Connecticut, another real estate sort of related story, is the hotel business in Connecticut. And you have a bit of a look into the state of things in 2024.
Yeah, the hotel market, you know, took a major hit during the pandemic. Obviously, travel was grounded to a halt. That has recovered now in Connecticut almost fully. Occupancy rate in 2023 across the state for hotels was 60% versus 61% pre-COVID, while revenues per room, kind of a key financial metric in the hotel industry, that actually was up 18.5% compared to 2019. So hotels are making more money per room. They're almost filled up as much as they were pre-pandemic. And now there's a big pipeline, you know, several dozen hotels that are in the pipeline that are going to come online in the next, say, 3 to 5 years. So the hotel industry is back. A lot of it is being led by leisure travel instead of business travel. Business travel used to make up 60% of room bookings. Now it's 40%, while leisure is 60%. So, and sports tourism is a big driver, too. You know, XL Center just hosted gymnastics. There's a major professional lacrosse tournament. It's going to be in Fairfield. There's a BMX biking tournament in Trumbull this July. Connecticut Sun, you know, had a sellout crowd for its first game of the season versus the Indiana Fever. So sports tourism is actually a big driver of our tourism industry, and that's helping fill up rooms as well.
Who'd have thunk it? Greg, as always, we appreciate the time, and you can go to Hartford Business, again, hartfordbusiness.com, to read all of this stuff. Just some really good content this week. We appreciate the time.
Thanks, Brian.